proof of the Cayley-Hamilton theorem, who says simply that P in A is the zero matrix. But now we know that A can be transformed into its Jordan canonical form. That is, we can write the inverse of S by A by S makes J Jordan canonical form. So A can be rewritten as S by J by the inverse of S. So we have to inspect the polynomial P computed in S by J by its inverse. It is easy to see that the polynomial in this matrix can also be expressed as S, the first matrix on the left, by P computed in J by the inverse. That is, we can bring out outside of the brackets the matrices of the transformation. This is simple, but I show you if you have A as this polynomial. This is the characteristic polynomial. You substitute for A, S, J, and so on. This is here. We square the first term. This product vanishes. So the first term is S by J squared S to the minus 1. The constant term can be written as S by this inverse. So we effectively can bring out S on the left and S to the minus 1 on the right. And this is, in the middle, is P J. This can always be made. The only important thing is that this product vanishes. So we have only one S on the left and only one inverse on the right. If we want to prove that this makes zero the zero matrix, we can cancel the matrices of the transformation. This product is zero if and only if this polynomial. So, in other words, to prove the Cayley-Hamilton theorem, it is sufficient to see that the theorem holds for the Jordan canonical form. But the Jordan canonical form is block diagonal And a polynomial in a diagonal or block diagonal matrix is also a diagonal matrix having along the diagonal the various values of the polynomial in the corresponding diagonal entries. I mean, if you have P computed in D, where D is a 2x2 diagonal matrix, 1 and 2 on the diagonal. The result is again a diagonal matrix with the values of this polynomial computed in correspondence to the two values, to the principal values. This is the same for blocks. The diagonal blocks of the Jordan canonical form are again the matrices J sub I, which are again block diagonal matrices. So finally, we have to show that P computed in the matrices C. The only thing to do is to look at the polynomial P computed in C, the indices where I am J. We can write again this characteristic polynomial as minus 1 to n, the product of the argument, the matrix C, minus lambda sub k from 1 up to p, as usual, lambda k by the identity, and the power is the algebraic multiplicity sigma lambda k. It's all right? Yes. But we exploit the structure of C. C, if you remember the structure, is the matrix made up by only two diagonal. On the main, there is lambda sub I, the index here, one. And one above. And the size we have called the size with me sub I sub J. This matrix C can also more expressively, I could say, written as the diagonal, which is lambda sub I by the identity of order, this order, size, ni e sub I sub j, plus a matrix with all ones in these positions. I call this matrix with the letter U, and I put in evidence its size, that is the same. In this product, which is over k, if we take k equal to I, I is an assigned value. K k has all the values between 1 and p, so k assumes also the value I. And we find that the corresponding factor is, so for k equal I, we have lambda for I write c in this way now, by the identity plus the matrix U minus K is equal to I lambda sub I by the identity of the same, I have forgot the size, which was necessarily nij. The first and the third matrices vanish, but we have also exponent power, which is sigma lambda sub I. So this factor, this is only one of these factors, but now I will show that this factor is zero. A zero factor in this product gives a zero result. Why is zero? We have only U with its size powered to sigma lambda sub I. The matrix, these matrices, the matrices U have a typical behavior when they are powered to an integer value that is, you know, is a matrix with the only one diagonal. If you consider a matrix of this kind, a matrix U with the four phase. Too small. This is matrix U. U is strictly upper triangular with three ones in these positions. Right? If you consider the square of this matrix, it's easy to see that we contain another matrix where the non-zero values are brought to the adjacent diagonal on the upper triangular part. Diagonal is brought up by one position in terms of diagonals. If you increase the exponent, this is not true. This is the same matrix by U, obviously, we have that this diagonal comes up again by the position. We have only one element different from zero, so if U consider the exponent equal to the size you have the zero matrix. So to see that this is the zero matrix, it is sufficient to observe that the exponent is greater or equal than the size. This is true. Yes, it is true. The the sum of the various sizes makes sigma. So sigma cannot be less one of these sizes. For each matrix U, this exponent is greater than the size of the matrix. So this power makes the zero matrix. I had preferred to show the proof in this way instead of the maybe most more elementary way that you find on the file on the web, because we see by means of this proof the way to determine the exponents of the factors of the minimal polynomial. We have just seen that C has the form product C minimal polynomial the usual factors lambda minus lambda sub I with these unknown exponents, but the role of the minimal polynomial is to be annihilated by A with the minimum degree. For the same reason we have seen before, we can compute C instead substituting for I the matrix J. It's a Jordan canonical form. That is, as before, we can write S by C J by inverse. This means that we have to prove that C J is zero. But C J can be substituted by C computed in the blocks of kind C, in the blocks C sub I sub J. Always for the same reason. C computed well, we know in we know the structure of these blocks. Inside these polynomials there are power of the form of this form C sub I sub J minus change the index and using the same index used before, for simplicity, for clarity. So we have lambda sub k multiplied by I of dimension nix sub I sub j. But we have already seen that this is the same thing that there is. All these terms are of the form lambda by with its size minus the matrix U with its size here is lambda sub j, here is lambda sub k, where k goes from 1 up to p. We choose E equal to E and have again there is now the exponent is not a sigma but is this unknown n sub k. At the end we have as before, u power to this exponent. The answer is the following. Which is the minimal value that I can give to this exponent such that these powers make zero for all j.
Nk must be greater or equal than
Nk must be
then the max then of
the max over
k y.
Me
over IG.
This is K. Yes. Me, P, J. Right? Where J goes from 1 to the geometrics. So this is K. Are all the indices right? But I want the minimum value. So N sub K is picked exactly as this maximum. So in the example we have seen before, assume that the right configuration of the Java canonical form where this one the matrix was 7 by 7. 3, 1, 2, 1. Okay. Seven by seven. I assume to know the Java canonical form. from the Jordan Chronicles form, we have that the minimum or minimal polynomial is lambda minus 1. Here we will put the right exponent, lambda minus 2. The exact values, the right values, are the maximum of the sizes of these two blocks for the first factor, that is 3. And this is the mark there, this position, this exponent, is the maximum of the two sizes of the blocks C corresponding to this eigenvalue. The minimum polynomial has degree 5, which is less than the degree of the characteristic polynomial, which was 7. Now we sketch the proof of the existence of the Schur canonical form. The proof is by induction. We sketch the main step. It's not very complicated. What we want to prove? That any matrix can be trinomialized by a unitary transformation. Schur theorem I have said by induction on the size, say n, for n equal to 1, is obvious, since a 1 by 1 metric is a number, say, a sub 1, this is the metric 1 by 1, can be brought to triangular form by multiplying by 1 on the right and on the left. 1 is a number, but is also a unitary matrix 1 by 1, so it's also very trivial. If n is greater than 1, we consider an eigenvalue and an eigenvector of A, and we write so A by X equal to lambda by X. We give the subscript to the eigenvector and the eigenvalue and assume to have normalized the eigenvector x, x sub 1, that is the two norm, the Euclidean norm, the Euclidean length. We will speak about norms next time. The Euclidean norm that you, however, know is equal to 1. We consider the so-called completion of the subset formed by only by the vector x sub 1 in a basis adding to this vector other n minus 1 vector, which we call y sub 2, y sub 3, y sub n. It is sufficient to choose n by minus 1 linearly independent vectors and to add them to the first vector. Moreover, we require that this basis is also orthonormal. This is not restrictive, because if we consider a generic basis of this type and it is not orthonormal, we can orthonormalize it we can think it orthonormalized by a method, a famous method, Gram-Schmidt method. I hope you know it. It's an orthonormalization method which consists in subtracting to each vector of the starting basis the projection of them over the vectors already found. So we imagine to have these orthonormal. Orthonormal means, I say this for clarity, means that all these vectors have length 1 and that they are mutually orthogonal. It is they have different names, so if you call VI, you have VI conjugate H, VH, VJ, you obtain 1 if the indices are equal and 0 otherwise. Vettore ortogonale e di lunghezza orthonormal vectors. In perspective, we want to work on this vector because we need a matrix U that is unitary. And the columns of a unitary matrix are always orthonormal vectors. So this choice is not casual. Now we construct a matrix which we call Q, if I remember well. Having these vectors as columns. So QH by Q makes the identity. So this metric is unitary for the reason I said before. Moreover, if you multiply Q by the first vector of the identity matrix, which we call E sub I, we multiply Q by X, not by E sub I Q QH by X. Consider this product. QH has first row X sub 1 H. That is QH is made with the columns of Q treated as rows and conjugated. We multiply this matrix by X, first row by column X, 1, because the vector was normalized. The other products, row by column, make 0 because the other vectors are orthogonal to X. So we can write this as QH by X equal to E sub I. Now we consider the product of this matrix. We use this matrix as a similarity transformation matrix. That is, we perform consider the product QH by A by Q and call this B. If we multiply B by these vectors, this is the same thing to pick up the first column as column of B. When you multiply a generic matrix by one column of an identity matrix, we obtain the corresponding column of the starting matrix. So B by this vector means the first column of B. But B has been defined in this way, so QH by A by Q by E sub I. This is the first column of Q for the same reason. But the first column of Q is X sub 1. First column of Q. Q has been constructed in that way. Now we use the fact that X sub 1 is an eigenvector. So, okay. Lambda sub 1, QH, this is a number, we can bring it everywhere. QH by X sub 1. We have already seen, just seen that this is the first column of the identity matrix. So, why we have developed these products? In order to see that this matrix B, the first column of B is lambda sub 1 by E sub 1. So the first column, we could say, is ready. We have triangularized the matrix A in the first column. So we have an idea of induction, because if we call in some way the other blocks, C, B partitioned in four blocks, we call this vector CH because it's a row vector, and call A sub 1, the matrix of size n minus 1. In that position, We can apply induction and write, we can write this matrix. Since the thesis is true for sizes less than n, we can write this matrix as zero, as we use the same letters U sub 1 by A sub 2 by U sub 1 H, where by induction A sub 2 is triangular. Here inside is a triangular n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix. We have to make a little step to reach the conclusion. B was QH A Q. To obtain instead of this matrix an effective upper triangular matrix, what we can bring out? We have to bring out these two transformation matrix. We can make these considering another transformation which has to be made on C to N instead that on C to N minus 1, but it's simple. We can write this as three matrices. In the middle, the triangular matrix. Here, I will write in a few minutes what is correct to write. Here I want A sub 2 that is triangular with partition all the matrices in the same way. We have here 1, here 0, 0. Here we put U sub 1 H. What must be written here to make the equality right? In this position there must be a row vector such that this vector by this matrix gives C H H. So it must be C H. If you perform the product, this row by this column gives C H U sub 1 by U sub 1 H. And so you obtain CH. The task is done, yes, because we bring these two matrices, we call them in another way U sub 2, U sub 2 H. Important comment. This matrix is also unitary. If you consider a block matrix with all blocks unitary, you obtain a unitary matrix. a block diagonal matrix of this form, and these matrices are unitary. It's simple to see that the Wood matrix is also unitary. So this matrix of n, naturally its conjugate transpose are unitary, and the final result is the reduction to the triangular form, and the transformation matrix is this was the matrix B, we multiply B, as I said, by this matrix we call T. And B was Q H. It's all right. And so, okay. For we stop here. The next result, next important result, is that for normal matrices, T is diagonal. We will appreciate this property of normal matrices as an essential, a characterizing property of normal matrices. Normal matrices are not so simple to recognize, but we will see that they are matrices whose sure canonical form is diagonal. That is, that can be diagonalized by a unitary transformation. See you Monday, next Monday.